All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So first of all, we just want to begin by thanking our shir sponsor for tonight, our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month, for the year of Tavshin Pehei, our annual Talmud Torah sponsors, the Tilson family of Eretz Yisrael, for dedicating all of the shiurim and drushos this year in the Schus of Besoros Tobos for Klal Yisrael. We certainly hope that the merit of our Talmud Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu, will bring home our hostages, B'shalom and B'karov, and allow our holy soldiers to be successful, B'chol Amaseh Yedehem. So with that, let us begin. So with your permission, or even without your permission, I want to focus actually on what I think is an incredibly intriguing episode from last week's parasha. I didn't get a chance to really go through it. I apologize for the last minute cancellation of last week's shiur again. But I want to focus on something that I find interesting. I don't know, we always speak about this idea how, even though we are so familiar with the stories of Bereishis, it's not like there's any new punchlines or any new developments, but I always find it interesting how different things seem to catch our eye each year. So take a look at source number one. So this is again from last week's parasha, Parashas Toldos. Beginning of the parasha, Rivka Imenu is pregnant. So the Torah says, Vayet ha-Yitzchak v'Hashem l'nochach ishto ki akarahi. So Yitzchak Avinu davened for his wife, for she was infertile. Vayet harlo Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to Yitzchak Avinu, vatar Rivka ishto, and Rivka imenu became pregnant. So of course, remember again, Rivka imenu at first has no idea that she's carrying twins, but she feels this incredible in utero struggle. Vatomer imkein lama za'anochi. So literally translated, if this is it, Lama ze'anochi, what do I need this for? Vatelech lidrosh es Hashem. And she goes to seek out, HaKadosh Baruch, she goes to seek out, Rashi points out that she goes to the yeshiva of Shem Va'iver to go ahead and seek out counsel. It's actually interesting, the Mefarshim point out that it's interesting that she went to Shem Va'iver, yet again, remember, who was her father-in-law? Who was Rivka's father-in-law? Avraham Avinu. Right, so it's interesting to note, by the way, that she didn't go to her father-in-law. Right, it's not like she. Remember, Avraham Avinu was a man of God. Right, but fascinatingly enough, she doesn't go to her father-in-law, and that could be for a variety of different reasons. Number one, it might have been for her too personal of a situation to go to her father-in-law for. Also, she doesn't have any idea as to what exactly is going on over there. In any event, just interesting to point out that she seeks outside counsel, independent from her own immediate family. So what happens? She is told. Vayomer Hashem lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to her, so to speak. Shnei goyim bevitneich, this struggle that you see inside of you, right, is actually that you're carrying two nations. The two sons you're carrying, Esav and Yaakov, are two nations. Ushnei le'umim me'me'ayach yiparedu, ulo'om mil'om ye'ematz v'rav ye'ovot sa'ir. So essentially, what Rivka Imenu is told is that struggle that is happening inside of you, that struggle that is happening in utero, is a metaphoric foreshadow for the ongoing eternal struggle that is going to exist between your sons. There's going to be an older son, a younger son, and they're going to be locked in a constant struggle one with the other. And they will never be on equal footing. When one is higher, one will be lower. When one is successful, one will be defeated. And this struggle that you're feeling, this movement of the children, which obviously was not an ordinary movement, this is a metaphoric foreshadow for the incredible difficulty that these sons are going to have. So Rivka Imenu, again, she's a full-term pregnancy. Her pregnancy comes to an end. And Mazel Tov, she gives birth to boys. Okay, a story that we're all familiar with. Incredible, incredible story. Now, of course, what's always fascinating about these stories is very often, you know, we are always drawn to the more midrashic components of these stories, right? The children are struggling. And remember, again, Rashi, we know, familiar with the famous Rashi. What's the struggle between Yaakov and Esav, right? What was the struggle? They would pass by a house of Avodah Zarah, and Esav would struggle to get out. Right, they had passed by a house of monotheistic worship, and Yaakov Avinu would struggle to get out, which of course, all of these midrashim bring with them so many questions. For example, a person, a human being, doesn't get the Yetzirah until they come into this world. The child in utero doesn't have a Yetzirah. So what does it mean that Esav is struggling to get out and go to Avodah Zarah? Yaakov struggling to get out to learn Daf Yomi? You know, what's going on over here? So sometimes, I feel like in these stories in Bereishis, we get so caught up in the stories and the narratives and the midrashim that we know that we often don't necessarily even pay attention to just the drama that's unfolding in the text. And specifically, I want to draw your attention to one phrase. Rivka Imenu, upon experiencing difficulty in her pregnancy, says this phrase, Vatomer, Im Kein Lama Ze Anochi. Which, how would you loosely translate?
What do I
need this for? Now understand the drama of that statement, right? Rivka Imenu struggled with infertility for a long time. So now, Baruch Hashem, she's been blessed with children. Again, obviously it's a rough pregnancy. It's a rough pregnancy. Not words that you would expect to hear from a woman who had suffered through infertility for all of these years. Right? We would expect, and you say, you probably think he's such a man talking right now, right? But one would expect that after having contended with infertility for so long, with all the pain and with all the discomfort, Rivka Imenu would have been, okay, this is what it is. It's temporary. I'll get through this. But Baruch Hashem, this is what I davened for. This is what I wanted. So first of all, it's an interesting insight into Rivka Imenu. Tamar lama ze anochi, if this is it, then what do I need this for? But the truth is, there's a more fundamental question. What's the more fundamental question? We look at that phrase. If you're an objective reader of the Chumash, remember we always speak about this. Is the Torah a storybook?
No.
What is the Torah? Torah is a book of law. It's a book of law, morals, and ethics. And any stories that are included in the text are only there because of their legal, moral, or ethical implications. Which means that whenever you see a story in the Chumash, it is not there to give you biographical or historical information. It is only there to impart upon you a legal, moral, or ethical lesson. This is, by the way, one of the major things between, let's say, Torah and Nach. Right? Let's say Nevi'im and Ksuvim are stories. And the stories there are actually there for their historical importance. Right? But in Chumash, stories are only here because of the lessons that they impart to us. And by the way, it has to be that way, because if the Torah is a storybook, there's so many pockets of information that are missing. Right? So much historical information that's missing. So I have to ask ourselves a simple question. Torah is not a storybook. Why do I need to know what Rivka Imenu was saying to herself during the pregnancy? Right? In other words, so Rivka has one of those days where she says, you know what? I don't need this. I do not need this. If this is what pregnancy is about, no thank you. No thank you. So question number one, how do you reconcile that given the fact that what she wanted more than anything after years of infertility was a child? And number two, why does the Torah record this? Remember, I just want to point out, who did Rivka say this to? Herself. Who did Rivka say it to?
Herself.
Which means that the only way we know this is because the Ribono Shel Olam chose to share this with us. Right? This is Rivka talking to herself, which is an incredible insight in and of itself. Chash Baruch Hu knows what you say to yourself. Chash Baruch Hu knows what you think to yourself. So what's really incredible over here is I know this because the Ribono Shel Olam is sharing it with me. That's the only reason. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt compelled to share Rivka Imenu's, I don't know, what's the right word? Resentment, frustration,
emotion.
Desperation, emotions. Why? So if you take a look at Rashi, so Rashi understands this in a very passionate way. Rashi says, number two, Vatomer im kein, gadol tzara ibor, lama ze anochi, mis'ave umispadalas alai rayon. So Rashi understands a pasha pshat that Rivka Imenu was saying, if this is what pregnancy is about, I don't need it. I thought I wanted it, right? I thought I wanted it. But if it's this painful, if it's this difficult, I'm not interested. So Rashi literally understands that Rivka Imenu was, you know, sometimes, what do they say? Like, be careful what you wish for. Mm-hmm. So some Rivka davened. She got what she wanted and she's like, oy vavoy, if I knew that this is what it was, I would not have asked for it. The Medrash number three understands differently. Well, the Medrash first part says the same thing as Rashi. Vatomer im kein lama ze anochi. Amra Rivka ilu ha'isi odas tzara ibor. The Medrash says it more explicitly. Rivka says, had I known how difficult and how uncomfortable pregnancy was, lo ha'isi mispaleles ala ibor. I would have never davened to become pregnant. Which, it's to a certain degree, it's almost like a little bit shocking that the Torah's sharing this with us. So by the way, before we go on, let's go on. Lama zanochi lefi shayu asidin lasayis yud be shvatim in Yitzchak Amar Rivka, Yelitzar Gadol, Lama Ani Mevakesha, Sheyetzei Mena Yud Beis Shvatim Kaminyan Zeh. So the Medrash quotes an idea over here that Yitzchak Avinu is also supposed to have 12 tribes. And Rivka knew about this Haftacha, and she thinking to herself, Oy Vavoy, right? What? No way. No way. No way. You know, there's the halacha is in Parshas Tazria, the Torah brings down that when a woman gives birth, she has to bring a carbon chatos, a sin offering, which is fascinating. Right? Why does a woman? So the Gemara explains, because when a woman is giving birth, she swears that she is never going to do this again. And because of that, she makes an oath. She makes a shvuah. So because one's not permitted to make an oath that you're not going to keep, right? So Kadosh Baruch Hu blessed us with, a certain degree. There are certain things that we forget over time. Gemara says that sometimes a woman forgets over time the pain of childbirth. People forget the acute loss of death over time. There are certain things Kadosh Baruch Hu allows us to kind of, quote-unquote, forget in order to be able to move on. So according to the Medrash understands it straight out that Rivka Imenu is saying, this is way too painful, this is way too difficult. Had I known what was involved in this, I would have never asked for this for this bracha. So if we pause here for just a moment, what is the Torah trying to convey to us? What do you think, what is the Torah trying to convey? What's the lesson? Because there's gotta be a lesson in this also. What's the lesson?
Don't have an SF.
Wait, be careful what you ask for. That can be. So I'm going to tell you a lesson. And again, it's going to sound very controversial, but I believe it to be 100% correct. Torah is conveying to us that the Avos and Imaos were people. They were people. They were human beings. They were not demigods. Right? We do not deify our great people. This is part of the beauty. Like the Ramban brings down. The Ramban says that Sarah Imenu made a mistake in that she mistreated Hagar. Right, the Torah goes through the whole story of Sarah convinces Avram to marry Hagar, then Avram does, then Hagar becomes pregnant immediately, she looks down upon Sarah chases her out of the house, and the Ramban says, Sarah Imenu mistreated Hagar. And the Ramban in fact says, do you want to know why there is animosity to this day between the children of Hagar, Yishmael, and between the children of Sarah, us? Do you know why that animosity exists? Because our mother mistreated their mother. That's what the Ramban says. The entire animosity between Yisrael and Yishmael is all because our mother Sarah mistreated their mother Hagar. You say, come on. Oh, fine. So Sarah, how many mistakes did Sarah mean to make in her entire lifetime? You could probably count it on one hand. But the Torah goes out of its way to show them to us. Why? Because it is so important for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to show us that the Avos and the Maos were human beings. We're people. I'm not going to use the word regular people because they were not regular people. They were incredible people, but they were human beings who chose to self-actualize. They were regular people who chose to become something dramatic and absolutely amazing. You see, if the Avos and the Maos were just supernatural beings, then their lives hold absolutely no importance to us because at the end of the day, we can't replicate that. But if I see that the Avos and Imaos were people, they were people, and they were people with incredible strengths, and also people with human weaknesses, some human weaknesses, then suddenly the Avos and Imaos become role models. So it seems to you that according to Rashi and the Medrash, what the Torah is highlighting over here is Rivka Imenu is a woman in immense pain, in immense pain. Remember, you have to understand there's a lot of context over here. Rivka Imenu doesn't have a mother. Right, her mother died. We know this again, we know this earlier, because when Eliezer comes to find the wife for Yitzchak, who is Eliezer talking to? Who is he talking to? He's talking to Lavan and Besuel, right? He's talking to Rivka's brother and father. Where's her mother? And Rashi says, her mother died. So this is a young woman going through her first pregnancy. There's no mother to talk to. And by the way, who else doesn't she have? A mother-in-law. So this is a young woman all alone in this world. Who does she have? She has her husband, who's wonderful. She has her father-in-law, who's wonderful. But there is no other woman in her family to be able to turn to talk this out. Like, is this normal? Does this happen? So can you imagine, first, besides just like the physical pain, also like the emotional pain of feeling isolated and alone. When a woman loses her mother and doesn't have the ability to like share these initial life experiences of getting married, Her mother, right? Her mother wasn't there for her marriage. Her mother is not there for her pregnancy. She's going through this all alone. And so the Torah says, she says, you know what? I don't know if I can handle this. I just don't know if I can do this. What like a humanity affirming moment. You mean Rivka Imenu was a person also who had moments of weakness, who had moments of weakness, physical weakness, emotional weakness, to the point where she says, you know what? Im kein, lama ze anochi. If this is what it's about, I don't think I want it. You don't think you want it. You davened for this so intensely for so long. You davened in one corner, your husband davened in one. Only thing you wanted was to create a family, and now you have it. But again, perhaps the Torah is highlighting to us that the Avos and Imaos were incredible, regular people who decided to become supernatural spiritual heroes. But they weren't born that way. They didn't start that way. They made themselves into that way. And in that respect, they become incredible role models. And by the way, not only that, but remember again, you know, of the Avos and Imaos, is they were all Balei Tshuva. They were all Balei Tshuva. You know, I often think about this. The Avos and Imaos would have an incredibly difficult time getting a shidduch, right? Can you imagine trying to marry off Rivka Imenu in today's climate? I mean, who could happen? She's got no yichus, right? Family's not thrown. You know, who knows what's going to happen? Terrible midos. Probably use plastic on the Shabbos table. You know, who knows? Who knows what else? You know, like crazy, crazy stuff. But it's fascinating, right? It's fascinating that our ancestors were Balei Tshuva. Our ancestors were Balei Tshuva. Right, they came from absolutely nothing and they made themselves into the greatest something. And every once in a while, it's almost like the Torah pulls back the curtain and gives us a little window into their beautiful and incredible, fragile humanity. And that's what makes them role models for us. But if you take a look at number four, there's another medrash. The medrash says as follows, Vatomer im kein, Rav Chagai Mishum Rav Yitzchok Amar. Listen to this. Melamed, this is incredible. So listen to this. Rivka Imenu has this pregnancy. She's suffering terribly. So what does she do? She starts going to the neighbors. She starts going to her neighbors. She describes what's happening in her pregnancy. And she asks her friends in the neighborhood, you know, in the neighborhood, tell me, Chevra, has anyone ever experienced these kinds of symptoms, this kind of stuff that's happening? And all her friends said, no, a little morning sickness, a little fatigue, strange cravings, you know, but battle, like battle royale in the womb, no, that we never experienced. Listen to this. So the Medrash number four has a different approach. The Medrash says, Rivka is asking around, right? Vatomer. In other words, she's asking, does anyone else experience this? And when she hears that no one else is experiencing this, what does she say? Im kein, lama ze anochi. Now, according to the first medrash, lama ze anochi means, what do I need this for? Right? Well, I dabbled for this, but really, I don't want this. If this is what this is, if this is the discomfort, if this is the pain, I don't want it. So according to the first approach, Torah's pulling back the curtain a little bit and just giving us a window into the humanity of Rivka Imenu. Second medrash says, Rivka Imenu says like this, I've asked around, no one else has had this. Im kein lama ze anochi. Why me? Not why me, like, why I don't want to be pregnant. Why me? Is there something broken in me that is causing me to have this pain? See, according to the medrash in Seichel Tova number four, the story is giving us an incredible insight about how to deal with life adversity. So there's something painful happening to Rivka Imenu. So she asks around, anyone else have this experience? When no one else has experience, it leads her to introspect and to self-reflect. Lama ze anochi? Why is this happening to me? Is there something going on in my life? Is there something in a state of disrepair in me? Is there something broken with me that has caused me to suffer in this way? Now, this is a profound theological point. This is Gemar Maseches Brachos. I apologize. I forgot to put it on the sheet, but I'll give you the Maramakam. I'll give you the source. The source is Maseches Brachos, Daf Hei Amad Aleph. So listen to this Gemara. And this is a a profound but yet dangerous Gemara as well. The Gemara says, Imroa Adam she yisurin ba'in alof. If a person is suffering, so the Gemara says, Yifashvesh b'masav. Fashvesh b'masav means introspect and examine your deeds. Now, this is a profound yet dangerous Gemara. Why is it a dangerous Gemara? Because what does it sound like?
It's your fault.
Right? If something bad is happening to you, it must have been that you've done something bad in life. Now, we know that that is theologically false. We know that because we have the concept of tzaddik v'ralo. Bad things happen to good people. So we recognize that the events of life are not necessarily tethered to what it is or what you're not doing. But what the Gemara is saying, so what is the Gemara saying? What the Gemara is saying is like this. A lot of times in life, difficult things happen and we don't know why they happen. And the truth is, very often it is an exercise in futility to try to figure out why bad things happen. So the Gemara says, so what do you do in the face of adversity? In the face of adversity, what you say is like this. What does adversity do? Adversity, you know, kind of if you imagine like the metaphor that Chazal often use with life is like a boat on the open sea, right? So when my boat is on the sea and the sea is tranquil and the waters are fine, right? So more often than not, when the waters of life are fine, people don't think about life. Right? In other words, if everything's going along as it's supposed to be going along, fine. Everything is great. Everything's fine. There's nothing rocking the boat. When suddenly adversity comes and the sea gets stormy and now my boat is being shifted around, maybe even about to capsize, what that does is it gets me to think about life in a different way. So the Gemara says, if a person is suffering, a person is undergoing difficulties in life, you may never know why you're undergoing those difficulties in life, but use it as a springboard and as a catalyst for introspection and reflection. Use the difficulty as an opportunity to look at life and to say, am I living the right way? Am I doing the right things? Maybe something I did brought about these circumstances, or maybe not. Maybe these difficulties Hashem is bringing upon me for a whole variety of different reasons that have nothing to do with what I'm doing or what I'm not doing. But I'm going to use the life upheaval. I'm going to use the difficult circumstances as an opportunity to look inward, to engage in self-examination and self-valuation, and to look at how I'm living my life. You see this distinction? I'm not saying that I'm going to find the reason why these bad things or these difficult things occurred. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But I tell you what I'm going to do now is I'm going to use this moment of upheaval to look at my life, to look at who I am, and to try to figure out how I can do better and how I can do different and how I can put myself on a different trajectory in life. That's what the Gemara means. Imroa adam sheyisurin ba'in alav. A person is suffering, and suffering is a very relative term. Right? Suffering means different things to different people. So if a person realizes that kind of like life has been upended, so now it's difficult, things are not going as they were, use it as an opportunity for introspection, self-reflection, and self-examination. It does not mean that you did something to bring about these difficult circumstances, but use it. Use the difficult circumstances to your advantage. Yeah, the sea is shaken up, right? So your boat now is off course. So use the opportunity, use the turbulence as an opportunity to re-examine who you are, what you are, and how you're living. So that's the Medrash is saying over here. Rivka Aminu is having a difficult pregnancy. So what happens? She goes to her friend. She says, Chevra, like, has anyone else ever had this? Everyone's like, no, never had this. So Rivka says, Imkein, Lama Zeh Anochi. Right? Lama Zeh, why is all this happening? Anochi. It must be that I need to start doing something different in my life. Rivka Aminu, according to the second approach of the Medrash, is not complaining about her plight. And she's not saying, had I known this, I wish I would have never become pregnant. That's not what she's saying, says the Medrash. She's asking around, and once she realizes that something abnormal is happening to her, Imkein, Lama Zeh, why is all this happening? Anochi, because I have to do something different in my life. I have to use the upheaval. I have to use the turbulence. I have to use the challenges and difficulties to introspect, to self-examine, to self-judge, and to figure out which different direction I need to take in life. So just think about the profundity of that message. And think about what Rivka Imenu is modeling for us, right? So if two divergent approaches in the Medrash, according to the first approach in the Medrash, she's literally saying, you know what, if this is what it's about, no thank you. Thank you, but no thank you, right? Been there, done that, tried it, the pregnancy thing, not interested anymore. I wish I didn't have it. In which case, the Torah is pulling back the veil on Rivka Imenu's humanity and showing us that she was a regular person, right? A regular person who did something supernatural with her life, which is incredible because now I know if Rivka could do it, so can I. If Rivka could come from a family of Rishayim and become a Tzadeges, so can I. If Rivka had to deal with the struggles of daily life and yet somehow overcomes them, so can I. Second approach is Rivka Imenu modeling for us how to deal with adversity. What do you do when you find yourself overwhelmed by adversity in life? What do you do? What do you do when life becomes painful? So we all know, you could lament it, you could complain about it, you could wag an accusatory finger, have a word saying it's not fair. You could do all of those things, which get you absolutely nowhere. Or you could say, life has been upended. These are circumstances I didn't expect. I'm gonna use it now. Now my life has taken a dramatic turn. I'm gonna use it to self-evaluate. I'm gonna use it as an opportunity to introspect. Yifashfesh b'masav. What's going on in my life? Not what's going on in my life to have caused this thing, because we have no idea why HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings about difficulties or challenges in life. But I'm going to use the upheaval to my advantage. Now that the boat has been rocked, I'm going to use it as an opportunity to look at how I'm living, what I'm doing, and figuring out if I need to make a pivot. Two different approaches. But I want to share with you one more approach. So this really, and it's based on a Mefurasha article in the Wall Street Journal. So last week there was what I think was just an incredible article in the Wall Street Journal. I put some of it here on your sheet over here, right before Thanksgiving. And you could see the title of the article, source number 5, This Thanksgiving, Let's Avoid the Dark Side of Gratitude. So take a look. It's a much longer article. You can look it up. I put the link over here also. So you can look it up online. We're not going to read all of it, but I'm going to show you. So Kim Murray sat down in her office one recent morning, opened a notebook, and wrote a heading on top of a page. Things I am ungrateful for. On her list, car repairs, technical issues with her website, weight gain, a friend who let her down. It helps to acknowledge the things that are wrong, says the 54-year-old business owner from Howell, Michigan. Murray was pushing back against gratitude, or at least the dark side of it. Forcing ourselves to be grateful when we don't really feel it can be harmful to our mental well-being, and our relationship psychologists say. This next line, this next piece, I actually meant to underline it because it's so profound. This dark gratitude can prevent us from acknowledging and addressing the problems in our life, and it will only make us feel worse in the long run. So I have to say, like, every once in a while you come across an article that you feel like, mamish, like this could have been part of Torah. It could have been part of Torah. So this idea, we'll go through it in a little bit, but this idea that sometimes we think that, like this attitude of gratitude, right? You ever hear people say the attitude of gratitude? You want to smack them when they say, I have an attitude of gratitude. Right? You know, this idea that this, sometimes like this whole gratitude, like bandwagon, is all about, it's about being grateful. And sometimes the way that it's portrayed is, don't be upset about the stuff that's not going right. Just focus on the stuff that's going well. Which, when you say it sounds so beautiful, but there's a problem. The problem is, if I don't focus on the stuff that's going badly, then I'm not going to pay attention to fixing it. In other words, if life becomes about the suppression of the things that are not working, in order just to fully focus on the things that are fantastic, that's nice, but what about the stuff that's broken? Like, when do I get around to fixing that? That's the godless. So this dark gratitude can prevent us from acknowledging and addressing the problems in our life and will only make us feel worse in the long run. We can't trick ourselves into positivity, says Peggy DeLong, a licensed psychologist in Long Valley, New Jersey. Tough emotions need to be addressed or they stay with us and continue to grow. All right, if you skip down a little bit, what's harmful? If you go down to the next paragraph, performative gratitude, such a great phrase, compelling ourselves to be grateful when we're not, is a form of toxic positivity. Mm-hmm. We actually spoke about toxic positivity like 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Toxic positivity is, you know, often we've all been on the receiving end of this. When something is wrong and someone tries to minimize your problem by contextualizing it. Like, you know, your problem's not that big. There are children starving in Africa, right? I know there are children starving in Africa, and it's tragic that there are children starving in Africa. But the fact that there's someone with bigger problems than me does not mean that my problems aren't real. So that's called toxic positive. It's such a great phrase, toxic. So the person's trying to be positive, but at the end of the day, what you're doing is you're negating my problems. You're negating my problems, so you're minimizing my problems, pretending they don't exist because someone else is suffering more. I got it. There's always someone who's suffering more. But just because there's someone with a bigger problem doesn't mean that my problems are not legitimate. He goes on. The energy we expend trying to avoid the uncomfortable feeling will ironically keep us focused on the problem. Then we feel guilty because we fail to be grateful. Forced gratitude is manipulating, says Sarah Kuberik, a psychologist based in Sydney, Australia. Here it is. It prevents us from taking responsibility to change things to make them the way we want them to be. What a profound idea. That sometimes by only focusing on the positive and ignoring the stuff that's negative or broken, I abdicate my responsibility to fix the things that are broken. Pushing ourselves to feel grateful can harm our relationships too. If we're putting on a facade, we're not being honest, which can lead to resentment and lack of communication. Murray, the list writer in Michigan, that's the woman who we started with in the beginning of the paragraph. This is Kim Murray. This is great. Murray, the list writer in Michigan, developed her Things I'm Ungrateful inventory after her husband died several years ago. She got sick of people telling her that she should be glad that she had time to prepare for his death or was young enough to marry again. It was a defense mechanism to protect my sanity, she says. Things get really bad sometimes, and it's okay to acknowledge the humanness of not being grateful. Murray, who created a website to help widows, compiles her list less often now. For each item, she asks herself a question. Can she let her anger go? If so, she writes down 3 actions to take. Then she shreds the list so that no one else will see it. Sometimes she writes a gratitude list too. A recent entry, the power in the home went out, but her generator kicked on. But I don't put stress on myself to be grateful every day, she says. If I did, I would just feel bad. Last section, avoid the pitfalls. How should we approach gratitude to avoid pitfalls and reap the benefit? Start by recognizing that there is a difference between a positive mindset and gratitude. You can choose to make the best of a bad situation without forcing yourself to be grateful for it. Such godless. Positive mindset and gratitude, right? So gratitude is obviously, I'm thankful for this situation. I'm thankful for this. But a positive mindset says, even the stuff that's difficult, even the stuff that's brutal, okay, somehow, some way, I'll navigate a way through it. Acknowledge what is wrong. Name the emotions such as anger, resentment, or embarrassment. Ask yourself if there's anything for which you do feel grateful, and it's okay if there isn't. But this exercise can help you identify genuine gratitude and to find a silver lining, DeLong says. Lean into gratitude when you do feel it. Genuine gratitude is what reaps benefits. Write it down. Tell someone. Bask in it. You'll know when it's true. So I thought this was mamish like yesh chachma bagoyim. There was such, I think, profound wisdom in this, that so often we abuse the concept of gratitude. And what we do is we say, be grateful. And what is be, how do we often translate gratitude? And we, especially as Jews, like we do this, right? Because we almost corrupt the concept of gamzu l'tova also. Right, Gamzu L'tova is this, we corrupt it and we think, what does it mean? What it means is, don't perseverate over the bad stuff. Just focus on the good. Be a glass half full type of person. Now, by the way, all true. Be a glass half full, be optimistic. But at the same time, a person has to be acutely aware of all the stuff that's broken and acutely aware of all the stuff that's not working. Because if you ignore that in the face of all the stuff that's great, then you never get around to rolling up your sleeves and fixing the things that need to be fixed. So life is this incredible balance. On one hand, gratitude for things that are working well and positive mindset for the things that are broken. And sometimes it's also okay to be upset with the things that are not working in life. Now, what's the chap? The chap is you can't remain upset. In other words, the challenge in life is when a person falls into that abyss of self-pity, right? Where I'm so upset about how my life has gone, and I'm so upset about everything that's happening, and I'm so upset about the different turns that I take, and I just feel bad about myself. And the self-pity grows and grows and grows. So on one hand, I'm allowed and even encouraged to sometimes feel a little bit bad about the things that are not going well. And I don't have to mask those broken things with some type of artificial or contrived sense of gratitude. What I have to avoid is falling into the pit of self-pity. And then after I identify and even feel a little bit bad about the things that are broken, roll up my sleeves and figure out what am I going to do about it. And perhaps, this is exactly what is playing out with Rivka Imenu. Go back to source number one for just a moment. So what happens? Rivka Imenu is finally pregnant after all of those years of infertility. So she says, Vatomer, Im kein lama ze anochi. If this is what it is, then what do I need this for? Let's go with the first approach of the Medrash. That literally she's saying, this is ridiculously painful. Had I known that this is what pregnancy was about, I would have never asked for this. By the way, when you read it like that, what's the one word you would use to describe Rivka Imenu? Come on, just say it. The first reflexive word that comes out that you would think about Rivka Imenu?
Ingrate.
What? The Ribbono Shel Olam gave you a miracle? Chazal tell us that the Imos did not simply struggle with infertility. They were sterile. Right? The Gemara discusses the idea they did not have the internal organs for childbirth. They were sterile. It was a nesnigla, supernatural miracle that the Imos conceived. So the Ribbono Shel Olam changed the laws of nature for you to have a child. And now, you're saying, Im kei lama zanochi, it's uncomfortable, so suddenly you don't need it anymore? Ingrate, right? We feel weird saying it because it's Rivka Imenu. But that's kind of like if it wasn't Rivka Imenu and somebody else told you a story about a woman who was infertile for years, and then Baruch Hashem was pregnant and was having a rough pregnancy, and she was saying, you know what, if I knew that I was going to get this sick, I wouldn't have it. You would think to yourself, you're nuts. You're nuts. Ingrate. How could you be so ungrateful for such a miracle? And yet the Torah tells us the story. Why? Because the Torah is showing us that it is okay. It is okay to be ungrateful. It's okay. It's okay to live a little bit in the space and to kind of dwell on the stuff that's really broken and not going well. Rivka Imenu is having a really tough time. It's a really difficult pregnancy. And yes, of course, she davened for it and she wanted it and she wanted a family with Yitzchak. She wanted to be a mother, all those different things. But the Torah is telling us that Rivka Imenu is having a really rough patch in life. And the Torah is teaching us that you don't have to mask the difficulties with some artificial sense of gratitude. You do not have to pretend that everything is okay when it's not okay. And it's not a lack of bitachon, and it's not a lack of emunah, and it's not a lack of hakaras at all. You know what it's called? It's called being a human being. And when we suffer and when we're having a difficult time, it is natural for us to feel overwhelmed. And that's what Rivka Imenu is modeling for us. She's modeling for us feeling overwhelmed in the midst of life turbulence. And she's not masking it by saying, Gamzu Latova. And she's not masking it by saying, but look at all the good that I have. And she's not masking it by saying any of those things, right, that the industry of gratitude tries to get us to say, to ignore what is broken in life. She's leaning right into it. If you ask Rivka Imenu in that moment, right, if you caught her in that moment of that pause, you said, Rivka, how's life? What would she tell you? Terrible. Terrible. Really, Rivka? Life is terrible? Yeah, so yeah, you have a good marriage. You have a nice father-in-law. You have a nice tent. You know, I don't know, whatever. You know, two camels. You know. I don't know. Life is terrible. Yeah, life is terrible. Because in that moment, Rivka, what she sees is her pain. And what she sees is her difficulty. And the Torah is telling us that sometimes the best way to deal with pain and to deal with difficulty is not to mask it with an artificial gratitude, not to mask it with some contrived or fake gamzu l'tova, but to lean into it. Sometimes it's okay to embrace the miserable part of life. And sometimes it's okay to say, you know what, this stinks. This is terrible. Imkein lama ze anochi. I can't believe I'm in this situation, and I would do anything to be able to change it. Right? It's okay. Now, what can't you do? What can't you do? What can't you do? You can't live in that space. You can't wallow in that space. And in fact, look what still in number one. What happens right after Rivka says Vatomer Imkein lama ze anochi? Right? What's the next phrase? Vatelech. In the next moment, Rivka says, I got to figure this out. So isn't this incredible? She wallows in it a little bit, right? This is terrible. This is absolutely terrible. Life is horrible. This is terrible. I'm not going to gratitude it away, right? This is terrible. But she doesn't live in that space. She doesn't wallow in that space. Instead, what she says is, okay, this is pretty terrible. Now I got to figure out a way to fix it. Batelech lidrosh es Hashem. What a profound and incredible way to address adversity. Don't pretend it away. Don't positivity it away. Don't gratitude it away. Lean into it. Lean into it. Because if you lean into it, right, there's a danger. The danger of leaning into it is that you may choose to wallow and live in it. But the good part about leaning into it is then after that, then you're ready to fix it. Now I know what the problem is. And now I see how profound the problem is. Now I'm really ready to do something about it. Vatelech lidrosh es Hashem. As opposed to if you never acknowledge it, the problem with never acknowledging it, while you put on the appearance that everything is so much nice, so everything is wonderful, that everything is so great, and everything is so happy, you never address the things that are broken. This is the profound lesson of Rivka Imenu. When things in life are miserable, it's okay. More than okay. It's good. More than good, it is absolutely necessary to acknowledge the miserable kite of life's situations. And it is important to name it for what it is and experience it for what it is and not minimize it and not even try to contextualize it and not try to mask it with some type of fake gratitude. But instead, it's good to own it. It's good to acknowledge it, and it's good to feel it. Lean into it. As long as in the next moment, you roll up your sleeves and decide, what am I ready to do about it? I'm not going to live here. I'm not going to walk. I'm ready. Vatelech lidrosh es Hashem. So it turns out that from one little phrase, we learn three dramatic life lessons. Incredible, right? Vatelech lidrosh, lesson number one. The Avos and Imos were people with struggles just like us and moments of difficulty just like us. So what distinguishes the Avos and Imos from everyone else is that they chose to go ahead and overcome the natural and become supernatural. Though you don't see the avos and the maos in us, is not that they were programmed differently, not that they certainly did not come from families that were any better than any of the families that we came from. They made a conscious decision to transcend some of the limitations of their humankind in order to become incredible people. And lest you think that now they were born this way, every once in a while the Ribono Shel Olam pulls back the curtain on the avos and the maos. Every once in a while, gives us a little glimpse. By the way, and this happens throughout the entire Torah. Fast forward a little bit to Shmos. Right after the Torah goes ahead and introduces us to Moshe Rabbeinu. Do you know what happens right after the Torah introduces us to Moshe Rabbeinu? It goes through a genealogy. It tells us who his grandparents were. Why? Rav Shlomo Shofar Hirsch says, Moshe Rabbeinu is about to ascend, a meteoric ascent, the greatest prophet of all time. Lest you think that he is not immortal, lest you think that he is not a regular person like everyone else, the Torah gives us his genealogy. He had parents, he had grandparents, he grew up in a home. I mean, he had a different kind of upbringing. But Lamaisa, the Torah is trying to humanize him. So the Torah does this. Everyone's allowed to pull back the curtain a little bit on the greatest of people just to show they're people. They're people. But they're people who chose a path of greatness. And if they could do it, so can I. Lesson number two. When we encounter adversity in life, when a person sees that Yisroel difficulty, suffering is coming upon them, Vatomer Imkein. Why? When Rivka Imenu encounters adversity, what does the Gemara say? Yifashe Shemasov. Not that you're going to figure out why bad things happen to you, but use the difficulty, use the turbulence in life as a springboard for introspection, self-evaluation, and self-judgment. When the boat of life is rocked, it's an incredible opportunity to look inward and to figure out, what am I? Who am I? How am I living? And what am I doing? That's what Rivka Imenu says. Vatomer Imkein, if all of this is happening to me and it's not happening to anything else, Anochi, I need to look inward and to try to figure out What could I learn about me? How could I pivot? How could I live differently? How could I do differently? And lesson number three, when we encounter difficulty in life, lean into it. There is such a reflexive reaction to sometimes just say, Gamzul Tov. And Gamzul Tov, of course, is a very high theological level. But even in Gamzul Tov means, I feel the pain, I acknowledge the pain, I even lean into the pain, and I feel miserable. But I believe with all of my heart that in some way, somehow, some way, this is going to be for good. Somehow, some way, this puts me on the right kind of derech. But the pain is there. The pain is acute. And sometimes we think that our goal is to mask it, to contextualize it, or to eclipse it by some overarching sense of gratitude. And Rivka Meir comes along and says, no, when you encounter difficult times in life, own it, lean into it, feel it, experience it. And it's okay sometimes to be miserable, and it's okay sometimes to feel like the sky is falling, and it's okay sometimes to say, Lama Zanochi, what do I need this for? What do I need this for? Lean into it, because if you lean into it, then Vatelech Lidroshes Hashem. Only after you know the pain that you have and you know what is broken, only then will you be ready to actually address it. The danger of leaning into it is wallowing and remaining in it. But Rivka Meir teaches us, feel it, embrace it, own it, lean into it, and then do something about it. Vatelech Lidroshes Hashem is not only an approach for Rivka Meir, but approach in our lives as well. All right, stop over here for tonight. Shkayach, everyone, have a wonderful evening. Next week, there's no shir next week. No shir next week. Emir Hashem, the next shir will be the following week, which will be our pre-Chanukah shir. Emir Hashem, hard to believe that that will already be pre-Chanukah. All right, have a wonderful evening, everyone. Shkayach.